Star Wars Action News presents Republic Forces Radio Network, bringing you coverage of Star Wars, The Clone Wars. Our hosts will review the toys, books, comics, games, and all things related to the Clone Wars animated series. And after each new episode airs on Cartoon Network, our hosts will recap and review the show. And we want to hear your thoughts on The Clone Wars. Call us at 415-508-JEDI every Saturday after a new episode, and your call may be played on the air. This week, we listen to your voicemails. Now, here's Arnie to discuss evil plans.
Hello and welcome to Republic Forces Radio Network. This is Arnie, co-host of Star Wars Action News, the Star Wars collecting podcast you can find at swactionnews.com. And we're here to discuss this week's episode, Evil Plans. And joining me this week, we have Barrent.
Hello, everybody. Coming to you from Southern California.
Jen.
Hello. It's Jen, oddball on the forums.
And Dan.
Hey, everybody, it's Dan, Darth Rockstar.
And since Jerry isn't able to join us this week, something called a job got in the way. I don't know about those things. Then, Dan, why don't you handle this week's plot summary?
All righty, Arnie. Well, as Arnie said, this is Episode 8 of Season 3, Evil Plans, production number 303. That's Season 3, Episode 3. Our fortune cookie this week is a failure in planning is a plan for failure.
I'm glad I'm not the only one who watches Mystery Men.
We begin the episode to find that Padme is planning a dinner party to impress Senator Aang, who's part of the Military Oversight Committee, with the help of C-3PO, who seems to find something wrong with everything that happens.
That won't do at all. This is a social gathering for the communal taking of sustenance. Your effort evokes the terror of younglings fleeing a flesh-eating monster.
Okay, then.
But the icing on the cake is, ironically, that the cake is missing a key ingredient, which apparently was R2-D2's one job.
I ask you to oversee one thing, and you allow this.
Anakin suggests that the two droids go and retrieve the missing berries, as long as they don't get lost or distracted. Filled with slightly hurt feelings, the droids depart.
Lost? Distracted? I cannot imagine where Master Anakin gets these ideas.
Unbeknownst to the droids, they are being watched by Cad Bane, who sends the rebuilt Toto 360 to intercept them. After some haggling and blatant swindling, R2 and 3PO purchase the berries, and we are given a little math lesson to boot.
4 times 4 is 16.
Announcing that they have 8 credits remaining, the pair are approached by Toto 360, who encourages them to take the credits and enjoy themselves at the conveniently located droid spa. This excites R2 very much, since he won't get a decent wash for another 2 decades or so. And with very little persuasion, he races into the spa despite 3PO's protests. Once R2 is gone, a speeder drops in behind 3PO, Toto pushes him into the back seat, and the IG-86 assassin droid driver takes off. Inside the droid harem, or droid spa, R2 is greeted by a pair of droids and ushered in to his day of pampering. Meanwhile, things aren't looking as good for C-3PO. The speeder arrives at its destination. The 86 droid lifts 3PO out of the speeder for him merely to be pushed into another by Cad Bane. As R2 gets an oil bath, we find that Z-3PO has been attached to a harness and is being prepared to have the information that Cad Bane wants stripped from his circuits. As 3PO is probed and prodded, R2 is getting a nice droid wash and a relaxing decarbonizing buff. Bane is getting nowhere with 3PO. He seems to be full of protocol and etiquette, which he gives Bane a free lesson in.
I am a protocol droid, human-cyborg relations. I can translate and instruct on appropriate etiquette, which in your case, sir, if you don't mind me saying, is sorely lacking. That is exactly the sort of behavior I am talking about.
Realizing they've wasted their time, Bane becomes frustrated with the lack of valuable data in 3PO, who protests that's not his specialty, but R2's. Bane sends Toto and the 86 after him. All bright and shiny from his day at the spa, R2 emerges and realizes that 3PO is nowhere to be found. He does find the berries that they purchased and begins to search for the protocol droid. Toto and the assassin droid arrive to capture R2. However, R2 causes a cart to fall over so that he can make his escape into a nearby alley. After searching the alley and finding merely a weak-way hobo and stunning the wrong astromech droid, Toto and the 86 announce that they will just have to destroy the protocol droid. This brings the noble side out of R2, who allows himself to be captured. Toto informs him of the poor decision he has made. Obviously, this was a trap.
Noble, yes. Wise, I think not.
Back at Bane's hideout, it's R2's turn into the harness. He's hooked up, and the desired data is extracted from him. Apparently, a process that involves lots of high voltage. Satisfied, Bane orders his ship readied, a short-term memory wipe on the droids, and for them to be dropped off where they were picked up, so that they can find their way back home, and nothing will seem out of place. Back at Padme's, the party is getting ready to begin, and the droids are nowhere to be found. She's getting a little concerned. The droids are unceremoniously dropped where they were picked up, and with a fond farewell from Toto,
thanks for the memories,
they pick up where they were 12.5 minutes ago, berries and all. Cad Bane arrives at Jabba's palace and turns over the floor plans of the Senate that he's acquired. After demanding his payment, Bane is informed there's still more work to be done. After a laundry list of demands from Bane, Jabba orders his throne room cleared, so he can get approval from the Hutt Council. Only Bane is permitted to stay. With Jabba's protocol droid translating, Cad learns the heads of the 5 Hutt families are concerned that Zero has information that could be damaging to the Hutt Council, and would be safer to have him under their protection. They wonder aloud who will take this dangerous mission.
That would be me. Cad Bane at your service. I'll take on any job. For the right price.
Back at the party, even the Baker droid is concerned about R2 and 3PO.
What are we going to do? R2 and C-3PO have not returned with the Jogun fruit for the cake.
The guests, unaware of any problem, are excited about the forthcoming cake. R2 and 3PO arrive just in time. The cake is made ready despite Anakin's concerns, and Anakin finds himself actually being scolded by Padme, who says the droids did well, and Anakin is too hard on them.
You should really lighten up on these two.
We're left with 3PO basking in the praise of his mistress.
A magnificent job. A magnificent job. A magnificent job.
Well, we're going to hear about this one for a while, buddy.
A magnificent job.
So why don't we go around and get everybody's thoughts on this episode? And as is our way, well, we start with ladies first. Jen, what did you think of this week's episode?
Okay. I don't think a lot of people are going to agree with me, but I really, really like this episode. It was so much fun. It was one of those over the top to the point where it was hilariously bad episodes. It was just funny. And there were a couple bits in there that I really enjoyed. That I like to see that 3PO got to actually be a protocol droid. He actually got to fidget with protocol and making everything proper for the senator guy. And I don't think we've ever seen him get to do that. So that was kind of fun. And Cad Bane just kicks all kinds of butt. So he was really cool too. But the stuff with the spa had me rolling. It was just so over the top and so ridiculous that it was great. And I was having droids flashbacks the entire time. The Trouble Again song was playing through my head pretty much the entire episode.
Thanks, Jen. Arnie, how about you? What did you think of this week's episode?
Jen, you're not alone. I was all back up in droids this episode. I just couldn't believe it. And the droid spa, I was expecting the Great Heap to show up. Or at least that little pink ditty that R2 had a thing for. I mean, really, I just couldn't believe how much this seemed like a callback to the old droid series. And while I don't think this episode was by any means perfect, it wouldn't rank up with the Star Wars films. As far as entertainment goes, taken for what it was, I kind of enjoyed this episode. I don't know how much I would have enjoyed it if we hadn't just rewatched all of Droids. But since we did and I had that context, I was like all into this episode. It was like retro fun. So yeah, I liked this episode.
Well, I wasn't in the Droids summer plans that you guys had. You know, I had to step out. So I hadn't watched all of the Droids episodes, and I still enjoyed this. You know, Nothing says Star Wars like C-3PO and R2-D2. I mean, they are really the dynamic duo. And I have never been a fan of R2-D2 on his own, per se. You know, where, and they kind of had a thing in here where he caught the credits with his outer covering. I don't know what they call that, if they call that a hand or if there's a magnet on that. Or, you know, when they kind of do stuff like that with R2, it kind of gets under my skin. But when you have R2-D2 and C-3PO together, it just works. I mean, C-3PO is just really funny, and they really caught, you know, Anthony, I believe it's Anthony Daniels who's doing the voice, and they really do, they really capture C-3PO, and I kind of wish that he's in a lot more episodes, because he brings the funny, he brings the comic relief that Jar Jar cannot. So I really enjoy this episode.
All right, looks like I'm a little bit minority this week. I didn't hate the episode, but it was not one of my favorites. I thought that the whole point of the droids going shopping, getting kidnapped, that could have been done in a newsreel easily. I did enjoy the part where we saw Cad Bane go and kind of show off for the Hutts. But, you know, thinking about it from the droids' perspective, yes, when R2 went in, I automatically went to droid harem. And I'm sure it's because we did just watch droids. And I was a little bit disappointed that if they were going to have that close to a throwback, that they didn't just at least have the one-legged pink astromech go by the screen just for a second. I mean, come on, they've done so many other throwaway things just for, let's see, what five people get this? Why couldn't they have done that? But it wasn't terrible. I think my biggest thing with this is this could have been a newsreel. There's so much in this episode that could have been hit really fast. And other things that were glazed over or that we're supposed to assume or that we only know because we read on StarWars.com that they could have made 3/4 of an episode out of. But I'm sure we'll be getting to that very soon. All right, so let's get it kicked off from the beginning. A whole episode, the point is Padme's having a party. Really?
And we weren't invited?
Would we want to be invited to that party?
Well, apparently there was a good cake. So I don't know. I didn't necessarily have a big problem with the whole Padme party thing. She's a politician, and what do politicians like better than gala affairs? So, yeah, she's having a party. Now, I kind of think that it's a little bit much that Anakin was standing there in full armor, because they don't have a different change of clothes for him, and telling her not to worry about everything. But it was an interesting plot point. I can't really say too much about it. Unfortunately, the episode wasn't about the party. It was just the setup.
I find it very interesting that Anakin's there at all. Nobody's asking questions. Why are you there, Anakin? This is Padme's party. What is Anakin doing there? Is Anakin her personal bodyguard since episode 2? I mean, he's never had a different mission. Nobody questions why Anakin is around Padme anymore.
Who would question? All that was there is a bunch of droids.
Well, what is, there's a war going on. You know, why Anakin's spending awful, you know, he spent a lot of time with Padme in her personal, I'm not sure if this is Anakin and their apartment. Is it? I assumed that it's their apartment. But for Anakin to be there, it just, he's getting very comfortable in the fact that they're married, I'm finding.
The party's about to start when we realize that 3PO, who's had nothing good to say about anything anyone's done in preparation, realizes a key ingredient to the cake is missing. So Anakin's brilliant idea is for 3PO and R2 to apparently go down to the black market and score some berries. Is that a little odd? They don't have a Walmart or a produce store just up the street? how does that work? I don't understand. It's like, well, I can go get berries, or I can go get a black market blaster, maybe some warheads or some cloning materials or fruit. I don't know.
I took it as you're kind of going to the Coruscant farmer's market or something. But before we go on to the farmer's market thing, did anybody else catch that? I loved that Anakin is holding the credits out like he's going to give them to 3PO, and he just goes, whoop, and hands them right to R2. Like, he's the responsible kid, and I just thought that was funny.
I didn't quite understand the whole thing. 3PO is obviously coordinating the party, right? So I wouldn't think you would want to send him for the berries. Now, R2 already screwed this up once. so I didn't think you'd want to send R2 for the berries. In fact, I thought the quickest thing would be Anakin, who's just standing around reassuring Padme, to go out and get the berries. Being a married man, I can tell you, on Thanksgiving, when an ingredient is missing, I don't send the in-laws to go get it, the nieces and nephews I don't send to go get it, nor I, the man who is helping to calm the woman who's going crazy, go and get the item and come back promptly. I just think that maybe Anakin should have gone.
Absolutely. Of course, we wouldn't have an episode then. But, yes, why do you send the toaster down to get the berries when you could have gone and gotten them yourself? Now, the only thing that struck me a little bit odd about him, about maybe the dynamic of the whole approach, was that he gives the money to R2, and R2's the responsible one. And we know 3PO. We know he gets distracted. We know he's a little bit flighty. But when it comes down to the time when, and this may be jumping ahead slightly, gets down to the time when Toto is enticing them into the droid spa, it's not 3PO that goes in and says, all right, it's R2. That's not really the R2 that we know, even though we all know R2's not going to get an oil bath for 20 years. It's not R2's way to be the one easily distracted and thrown off course. That kind of rubbed me the wrong way.
I completely agree. Of the two of them, he is not the one to be like, ooh, luxury, and go off. There needed to be something else to draw him in there. Yeah, that was a misstep. That was one of the missteps. The other misstep is the fact that there's a droid spa.
Exactly. And apparently droids are like kids. If you give them money, they are not going to get your change back.
I just don't understand why droids would enjoy a spa. I mean, yeah, we have the one scene in A New Hope. This oil bath will feel so good. But I didn't understand. R2 doesn't have nerve endings, right? So when they're rubbing his shell like a massage, A, it was kind of creepy. And B, I'm like, aren't you just going to scratch off the enamel with the metal on metal? I don't see where he's enjoying this. An oil bath is one thing, especially after a couple days walk in a desert, but I didn't get the spa thing. Again, I really wonder if it was an homage to the Great Heap. I really do.
I love the droid spa. I think the oil bath, R2 does take an oil bath where, you know, he first rolls in there and he puts up his periscope and he gives the little purr. I thought that was great. I thought that was a great nod to the oil bath. You know, C-3PO taking an oil bath in episode four. So I think that was a great nod to that. And they just kind of took it to the next level with the he may not have nerve endings or anything, but even I wanted to go through those rollers, man. That looked nice. After a long day of work, they look nice. But, you know, R2's been working hard for a long time. You know, he's keeping secrets. He's hiding Death Star plans. He's got to do his thing. So for R2 to try to take a day off and get his feet waxed, I think that was pretty good. I think it was really good. It also gave C-3PO the chance to act like C-3PO, the worried, I'm not going to do that, we're going to do this, and how could you not listen to me, and the, oh no, you know, for him to get kidnapped. So I like the droid bath.
I thought it worked because it was all a little bit tongue-in-cheek because it was so over the top. Like the bit where with the weird lady droids massaging him, that was just so far gone, it was so overblown that it went into comedy for me. It was hilarious. So I was like, I don't know. I just thought it was really funny, and it was kind of cute. It didn't bother me at all. I thought it was funny. I was laughing the entire time, except I was expecting the Great Heap to eat him when he was in the little oil bath with his periscope up. I was having a lot of flashbacks, and I kept expecting the lady droids to be evil or something, again, because of droids. But yeah.
Jen, do you think this was intentional humor? I mean, yes, it was funny, but was it intentional humor, or was it the writers being like, only 5-year-olds are watching anyway. Droid spa, it makes sense.
See, I don't know, because they had the Seth Green bot, whose name I can never remember. He was saying how, you know, your servos aren't working, you get, like, stuff isn't firing correctly, and they've already kind of established that these droids think and can to some degree feel, and so it makes sense that they would want some sort of at least repairs done. And even 3PO for a minute, he's like, ooh, maintenance, wow, for just a second. So I don't know if it was intentionally overblown to be funny or if they just kind of missed and it was funny anyway, but I don't think it was bad. I don't know. My husband loved it too, so either we're really child-minded or it was a success.
Well, my wife just wondered if R2 was getting the happy ending.
So. What I want to know is, why don't they make the medical droids like those female droids? Why do the medical droids have to look like zombies? You know, you would think that if you're Luke Skywalker and you just got your hand cut off and you're in a Bacta tank, you'd want a Betty droid or one of those pink droids to look after you.
The Florence Nightingale
droid?
Yeah,
you know, you want a nice droid, you know.
The Rebellion can't afford those. They're way too expensive.
So 3PO goes and gets completely swindled by this merchant with that giant mustache. But before that, he tries to buy the fruit off of Ithorian. Did any of you guys think that that Ithorian was there just so they could build a vintage hammerhead again? Because he was in like the blue outfit, like the vintage hammerhead.
I don't know. Ithorians everywhere in this episode. They were like a plague.
Well, they only have so many character models to work with. But I just kind of geeked out when I saw him in the blue shirt, and I'm like, oh, God, it's the vintage hammerhead. Now they can make him. And would 3PO be so easily taken? I'll give you four. I'll give you four each. Times two. Are they just so wealthy that 3PO doesn't care? Or is it that I would think that 3PO would drive a harder bargain?
Yeah, I agree. Though I did enjoy the little lesson in math that four times four is 16. It was the more you know. But yeah, I would think that 3PO would be like, no, you said four each. I'm a droid. I can do math in my head. So maybe we'll just go shop somewhere else. But no, he's going to stick with this guy no matter how much he says. Oh, okay. I guess you're right. That didn't make any sense at all.
None. I was upset that 3PO didn't put up more of a fight. 3PO is nothing if not argumentative.
That he is. I mean, look how much he argued when he was being electrocuted for information. So Jen brought up Toto 360. He's back. How'd that happen?
Well, if you read the episode guide, apparently Anakin rebuilt him, and then the rascally thing escaped and went back home to Cad Bane.
Yeah.
You know, that's glad they told us these things in an episode guide. It kind of goes back to season one. Remember when in season one, Obi-Wan and Anakin have the drugged drinks and don't drink them? And then we come back the next episode and they've been drugged and we're all scratching our head and there was a webcomic for that. Yeah, now there's the episode guide giving us two sentences saying it. So, yeah, that was kind of bothersome. I didn't realize it. I'm like, is that a different model? Just the same voice? But, yeah, it was kind of, hey, it's Seth Green. I'm happy to see him here.
Oh, I am too. I also saw that bit on StarWars.com. And that's the second or third time that they've done it to us this season. There's some really, or maybe we're just geeking out way too much about this thing. There's some detail that would kind of be very helpful to know in the storyline, or, you know, in the newsreel. They throw two episodes worth of stuff into there already.
Let me get to my complaint about this episode, my biggest one. I didn't realize until the end of the episode that this was taking place like way back before Hostage Crisis. I didn't realize it until the very end. I mean, why would I? Padme's having a party. They're going out to get fruit. And they wanted the Senate plans. And I didn't even put two and two together with, well, they've already been to the Senate. And so, you know, with these newsreels that set everything up, I think that I would have liked the newsreel to be like, but before Hostage Crisis, this went down or something. You know, let us in on this before we start the episode. If I'm confused about this and I'm a 30-something-year-old guy, I can't imagine how kids are scratching their head at the end when they're like, you mean Zero is captured again? I mean, it's very confusing and they need to. I don't mind them jumping around. I'm kind of cool with it. I watched Lost. I can handle it if you tell me when we are up front. It's not even a cool twist ending like at the season three finale of Lost when, you mean this was a flash forward instead of a flashback? There was no purpose to being ambiguous about the time when this took place, right? I mean, I didn't miss anything, did I?
No, unless you were doing your homework, you had no idea when this would have been until the very end. It would give them the old forehead smack and said, wow, Zero's in prison. So this is before Hostage Crisis. So once again, as this is the pattern so far with season three, we're visiting an episode from season one. We're going to put one episode before it, maybe two, and one episode after it, maybe two. We've got last week's episode and this week's episode before Hostage Crisis, and then next week's episode takes place after Hostage Crisis. So this is making my head hurt, and I can't imagine what it's doing to the poor kids.
So these are the secrets that they're talking about. This is the pattern. These are the secrets that this season is touting, secrets revealed. So what they're really meaning is they're not going to tell us who wrote the Journal of the Wills. They're not going to tell us who Darth Plagueis was. They're going to tell us what happened before you saw... You've already seen this episode, so we're going to tell you what happens before this episode. Then we're going to tell you what happened after the episode you saw. And that's the secret. Is that really what this is going to... Is that really the secrets that they're telling us?
It's either that or the secret revealed is the whole Darth Maul brother, which is going to be episode 21 and 22.
But the secret's out. I know who he is. He's Darth Maul's brother.
Or do you? Or do you? According to what I've read, he's rumored to be Darth Maul's brother.
Oh, so another secret revealed, but we won't find that out until next season.
Okay, so Toto's back. We're all confused, which that totally could have... I foresee that being an episode all in itself at some point, someday.
Do you think? Or do you think that... I mean, that wouldn't be a very exciting episode.
Senate murders. I mean, Senate spy.
But then again, I suppose R2 and 3PO go for fruit wouldn't necessarily look that good on paper either.
All you need, as this episode showed, was 9 minutes of good stuff, and you can have 13 minutes of crap. So they could do it.
I really like Toto 360. I thought that Seth Green did a really good job. There's something about his voice that really fits as a droid character. You know, Anthony Daniels did a great job. But there's something about, you know, he has the character down. He has the way that Toto speaks and how he raises his voice and lowers his voice. I mean, I think that Seth really has the right thing going with his character is supposed to be. So I think he really did a good job.
Yeah, even though he's not doing much more than what I've seen is Seth Green's impersonation of C-3PO, because I think it was Without a Paddle where he keeps doing the C-3PO voice, and that's pretty much the same voice here. Was anyone else surprised, though, when Toto, like, body checks 3PO? I'm like, wow, I've never seen droid-on-droid violence before, other than, like, battle droids and things, but just this... Prim and proper Toto and prim and proper 3PO and like a chest bump and 3PO is knocked over.
Yeah, that kind of struck me. Toto kind of seemed different this episode. The first time we saw him, he was kind of wanting to do whatever he can to help you, Mr. Bane. And then all of a sudden, when it gets down to the end of it, I'm a bomb, I'm going to explode. And boom, he exploded. You wonder if maybe when he was getting put back together, something didn't get put in right, or maybe he came to the realization of the cold, harsh realities of the universe that he was used as a bomb. He seems a little bit more sinister this time. I mean, he was able to do the goody-goody when he's telling them all about the spa, but then when it comes down to cracking, then he's getting rough with 3PO. He's making these really loud claims that they're going to destroy him to draw R2-D2 out of hiding. He seems a little bit more sinister than he was before. So, maybe some character building of Toto 360.
For Toto, I was more busy being confused as to when this took place, because I didn't catch the thing on StarWars.com until afterwards, to really pay much attention to his difference in character. But now that you mention it, Arnie, he was kind of aggressive, which is much different from his previous iteration. So that is a little weird.
Okay, so they've captured C-3PO. They have him in some kind of manacle thing, and their 8D8 wannabe droid is hooking him up and has him...
Wannabe? I think that's 8D8.
No, it was they said it was something different on StarWars.com. And I think Nathan will refer to that for us later as well. I believe it is. He's J-O-N-O. He's Jono. That was kind of my next question. Is that really the best way to get it information, to download information from a protocol droid? Do you strap him to the ceiling and hook up the jumper cables and put as much live voltage as you can through them, and that... We'll get the data, because last time I checked, that is going to really screw up your computer if you try it that way.
Well, Dan, they don't breathe, so waterboarding's out.
That's true. It just seemed a little bit unnecessarily torturesome, rather than hold it down, plug in a data port, where's his USB port, and just strip out everything that we can. And then, well, I guess they had to do that to make him give on R2-D2, but still.
Well, you've got to think that these droids... especially those that work for the senators and the Jedi, have access and are privy to such confidential information that you'd need a really good hacker to do it. And Cad Bane may not have one on staff at this point. We don't even really know when this is. He got the fish hacker later from Hostage Crisis, maybe. You've got to think that there's some safeguards in place. Also, to the kids watching, these characters are people, and so it might be disturbing to see you pop their heads open and plug in a data jack. But you're right. I'm making excuses for the episode. You are right. But by the same token, there should be some safeguards in place, logically, that would just prevent anyone off the street hacking into a senator's aides droid.
I took it they were just going for the drama for younger people's sake. Like, there's nothing really dramatic or scary or very interesting about them just plugging a USB into his forehead or something. So, or even just a hacker guy plugging in and typing on the keyboard. I just don't think that would have worked visually or in terms of the storytelling. So they threw in the goofy, theoretically circuit fusing electric arcing, which was really kind of weird. But I could suspend my disbelief enough to deal with it.
All right, so C-3PO doesn't have what they want. He gives up the goods on R2-D2, so Toto and an IG-86 go hunting. Now, I saw this as when they were leaving the alley and having this loud conversation about, oh, you can't go back to Cad Bane empty-handed. This was a trap. They were totally baiting R2-D2. Was I reading too much? Was it trap?
It was quite obviously they were setting R2 up, because R2 was too smart for them. Fortunately, he was still at that spa. That's awfully convenient.
Yes, isn't it, though? Well, see, and that's where I really thought, along with what Jen said earlier, I really thought at some point the two girl droids, Cindy and Bonnie, or C, what was it, S1N1 and BON1, I thought that at some point they were going to turn out to be in on it, and it was going to be some sinister plot involving R2. But no, apparently you don't need an appointment, you don't need to pay. You just roll in and you roll out, and then by the time you get out, well, then the bad guys are waiting for you.
Didn't R2 have the change? He might have paid.
He had 8 credits left, so he could have paid.
8 credits for a spa, that's pretty good. Unless credits are worth a lot more than I'm thinking they're worth.
Yeah, you don't know that conversion rate.
Yeah, what's the conversion rate? Because if it would took 4 credits for 4 pieces of fruit, but it takes 8 credits for a luxury spa treatment for your droid. So, you know.
But how much is that in Woopoopy?
Woopoopy?
So then they capture R2, and they finally get what they're looking for. They didn't even have to torture R2, did they?
Or
did
I? Nah, they gave him a little jolt, and then he gave up what they wanted. And then it was about that point where everything clicks, and we say, oh, they're going after the Senate building. No, not really, because they still didn't say anything about Zero. So maybe Cad Bane's forgetful, and he just can't remember his way around the Senate building, even though he was just there freeing Zero.
I wasn't thinking about it. I wasn't putting two and two together on it. I knew that he was going for the Senate plans there, but I just didn't put it together. I was like, okay, he's got the Senate plans. That's dangerous. But, you know, he was hired, apparently. Cad Bane's billing structure must be such that he'll only do one task at a time, because he got the plans and then he works out a separate contract. I realize I'm jumping ahead in the episode, but he works out a separate contract to then do anything with them. Wouldn't you think if you're hiring a bounty hunter, you'd hire the bounty hunter to do the job and any like prerequisite work would be included in that contract?
Well, Jabba didn't get permission yet. He commissioned Cad Bane to get the Senate plans, the Senate building plans, but he hadn't talked to the Hutts yet to get the okay. So maybe Jabba's smart enough to, you know, get job one done before he goes ahead and jumps into, you know, trying to break his brother from the pokey, you know. So,
well, I'd go with that if, when talking to all those other Hutts, all of whom had some weird characteristic about them, if during that he went, see, now I have Senate plans, can we please go ahead, versus it never ever coming up. So he was essentially gambling however much Cad Bane's fee is, which I'm guessing is about 200 woopoopy. And if the other Hutts said no, he's like, well, I've got these architectural plans now, I guess I can build my own Senate.
See, and that was the one time I really wish this episode had subtitles, or that I spoke
old ancient Huttese, because I'd really like to know what was said in that meeting other than the little bit that the droid told us, because I'm pretty sure they said some other stuff.
I did like that they did speak Huttese, though, because I know there was a lot of complaining on the forums about how too many people are speaking basic and there's not enough translating and blah, blah, blah. So that they held it okay with the Huts. There was no... Zero's, I guess, the freak in the family. He's the only one who speaks basic.
Well, maybe the others can, but when they all speak basic, they speak with that drawl, and the others are just too embarrassed.
That would be great if Jabba... I can't even do it, but it would be great if Jabba...
Boshuda! You know, I just need a little drink.
Yes, from Bluto to Droopy Dog, all in the language you're speaking.
Can we talk about these Huts? Is this the first time that we've seen a council of Huts come together? Because you mentioned that each one of the Huts had a unique physical appearance, and of course they probably had to do that. You know, when you have a bunch of worm-like creatures, they can't all look like worms. So they had to do that, but is this the first time we've seen a council of Huts?
The Hutt Grand Council was actually first talked about way back in A.C. Crispin's Han Solo novel, The Hutt Gambit and Rebel Dawn, talking about all the Hutts working together and separately to determine how they can, you know, like the various mafia families, they'll kill each other if it benefits them, but they'll also work together against all of the police and whatnot. And we kind of saw that in the opening movie where we had Zero working against Jabba. And here we get to see them come together for the first time. Now, all of these Hutts in the pictures, I thought were, I don't know. I'm just used to all my Hutts looking about the same. Not to be speciest, but all Hutts looked the same to me until this time when all of a sudden all of the Hutts looked like they came out of a Picasso painting.
I really liked that they had the Hutt Council because... even from episode one, they have that line in there at the beginning. It's like, oh, the Hutts are gangsters. And they're always talking about the Hutts and not just Jabba or anything. So it was neat to see this gangster group and actually working as kind of a gangster group. And they're hiring this guy. They got to take out one of their own who's causing problems. It was very, very mafia-esque, which was fun. And I don't know who said it. Someone either tweeted it or posted it on the forums. They're talking about one of the Hutts really looked like Slimer, and he really did. I think they ripped off the Ghostbusters model or something because he had a weird head.
Now you say that, you are so right.
I don't know who. I think it might have been Ginger Prince who posted that, but he looked really freaky.
Yeah, I really like the different characters designed for the Hutts because in some portions of EU they did talk about how different Hutts had kind of developed differently because they had chosen to make their homeworlds on planets with less gravity, or I can't remember which book it is. It references the shell Hutts who contain themselves in like suits of armor. So that they had different kind of character models was good. Some of them were a little bit too cartoony. I think it was Arak the Hutt that Jabba spoke to the most. He kind of looked like the American Eagle from the Muppets a little much, which was kind of odd.
It's just going to take a little while for me to get used to it. Again, having been an EU fan for almost 20 years, not counting the fact that I read the books published in the 70s, it just seeing all these various designs. And now that you've said Slimer, Jen, these designs do look like something I'd see in the real Ghostbusters, you know, in that cartoon, the way they'd always have these ghosts look so extreme, and having all the various makeups and shapes remind me of different ghosts from Ghostbusters now. But, you know, I'll go with it. I'd like to learn more about them. My favorite Hutt at the moment is still Zero, but that could change.
It was good to see the Hutts. The one thing I thought, do you think that when we saw the Hutts, do you think it kind of weakened Jabba? In my view, it kind of weakened Jabba because I always thought that, you know, I've heard about the Hutt Council, but I always thought of Jabba as to be, he's number one. He's the godfather. You know, I want Jabba to be the godfather. I want the other Hutts to have a council and have to have his council. And that was the only thing I wish they could have did a little bit with the council. But other than that, I like seeing the council. I like seeing the different Hutts. You know, if they didn't look different, I thought it would be kind of weird if they were just all kind of colored differently, like dinosaurs, kind of like Zero is. So it made sense that they would all have different bone structure. Do Hutts have bones on the inside? I don't know how they're made, but it was pretty cool.
I was very glad, though, that none were obviously female, because there's that whole thing about Hutts and asexual reproduction, and they turn female when they're pregnant and then become male again. I was really worried they're going to nuke another portion of the EU or just have horrible retcons like, oh, that female Hutt, well, obviously she was pregnant, wasn't she? So I was glad to see they all seemed androgynous to male.
So there's the Council of Hutts meeting. And in the background lurking is Cad Bane, who's eavesdropping, as it were, through the means of this protocol droid. Those last 5 minutes made that episode worth it. I actually liked Cad Bane more after that because of just the way he handled himself, the way that character was handled. What'd you guys think? Did this do anything to improve your opinion of Cad Bane? Did it knock it down a little bit because he was torturing a droid through 3/4 of the episode?
It was great. I thought he was a little bit too grandiose. I don't know how many bounty hunters really like the spotlight, but he was certainly happy to be like, I'm here and I'll take any credits. You know, I guess it's a good way to advertise among crime lords. I'm going to do this job for you. And if you got anything else, hey, I'm available.
I really like Cad Bane. I love that he's always... we haven't seen him really out of control yet. He always has. He reminds me a little bit of Batman. If he has a plan, he can kind of do anything. He rolls with anything that comes along. Nothing really seems to catch him off guard. He's really cool. And I love how he just swaggers right in there amidst all these huts, just like, oh, whatever you want, just hand over the money. And he's fun. I really like him. He harkens back a lot towards the, you know, a little bit cowboyish, which kind of reminds me of the episode one, the cantina scenes where they have these kind of rough gangster type characters. So he's fun. I love him. I can't wait to see more of him.
But I'm the one who jumped ahead a little bit with the Hutt Council. The real end of the episode was, of course, back at the party, the bookending story. Cad Bane tortures the droids, gets the information, and lets them go.
They let him go. You know, that was one of the choices that Cad Bane made that was, in my opinion, was not quite in his character. You know, we know Cad Bane is kind of the calculating, get the job done, very smart, not afraid of anything. And one of the choices that he focused on C-3PO as being the target was never really explained. You know, why would they focus on C-3PO? I know he's Padme's protocol droid, so logically you would think that maybe he's hiding some plans or something in him. But you got two droids there, so why don't you just take both of them? And for him to wipe the droids' minds and let them go is kind of a throwback to C-3PO's getting his mind wiped all the time. I mean, even Bail Organa doesn't trust him with the knowledge after episode 3. You know, he wipes his mind. But I like the fact that after they get their mind wiped, that their personalities don't change and they're not like amnesia where they don't know where they're at and they're lost. They still keep their programming together. But it just, that was one of the things that just didn't make sense with, why would he let him go? Why would he torture the robots in the first place? So,
well, I mean, I get the torture, as we talked about a little bit before. The letting him go, I'm with you, because on one hand, I'm thinking, you blow him apart, the droids just go missing. I mean, they were out in a seedy area of street merchants, so there's not going to be a paper trail back to Cad Bane. The other thing, which I just hear people saying, so I'll just say it ahead of time, and maybe it was on StarWars.com, but you don't want to raise anyone's suspicions, right? That something might have been stolen. If R2 goes missing, it's kind of like when you lose your wallet. What's the first thing you do? You cancel your credit cards. So if R2 went missing, the first thing they'd be is, what does R2 have in his memory? And start locking things down and tightening security, expecting it to be a plot and not just a random occurrence. So I can kind of see it. I just wish that they'd said one sentence about that.
I think they actually did. What I was going to bring up is Cad Bane actually drops this one line. Someone says, I think, let them go. What are you doing? And he said, it's too dangerous to have them go missing or something like that, because I was right with him the entire time. It was okay. He's going to delete the last, 2 hours of memory, throw them right back into their original place, because I thought there were a lot of witnesses running around when they throw 3PO in the jet and everything. There are people everywhere. So if Anakin or some other Jedi came snooping around, there probably would be people who would be like, oh yeah, there was this blue guy and his droid and an IG droid, and they took your droid over there and they came back all dirty and or, you know, something like that. And I think it makes Cad Bane look all the more threatening that he's able to do these delicate, really sneaky missions on top of these, you know, guns a-blazing, charge into places stuff. So I liked it. I thought it fit perfectly.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. Cad did say something to the effect, it was either an IG-86 or the 88 wannabe droid who did say, what are we going to do with these two now? And he's like, let them go. We don't want anything to look out of place. And right with Jen, if they had gone missing, that's Anakin's droid. He's going to be down there asking questions, whipping out his lightsaber and threatening people to find out what happened. That's going to raise suspicions. But if they just get dropped off and they've somehow misplaced the last 2 hours, well, Anakin's just going to look at him, oh, it's just my two idiot droids. What are you going to do? And go on. And that's pretty much what he does. Completely unawares of what is, I can't remember how the news reel said it at the beginning, unaware of events that are preparing to shake the very core of the Republic.
Now,
you know, something just occurred to me as we were having this conversation. So Jabba hired Cad Bane to steal the Senate plans. Cad Bane chose Senator Amidala's droids out of all the senators. Okay, I'll go with that. And the whole goal is to get Zero out, which Cad Bane does by taking hostages and forcing Palpatine to let Zero go, right? How much micromanaging was Jabba doing? Wouldn't it just be you hire the bounty hunter to break out Uncle Zero and the bounty hunter gets it done instead of, I'm going to pay you to take these plans so that you can take hostages so that we can negotiate for my brother's release?
Apparently, Jabba's only bidding out this job one little step at a time. It's not, get Zero out, I don't care how you do it, this might be a good way, here's the money, have fun with it. It's, go get the Senate plans. Now, go hold some people ransom. Now, blow this up. It seems to be a very convoluted sort of plan, rather than a run and gun, or maybe do something in the prison. It involves the Senate building. It seems like, I don't know, shaking with your right hand, smacking with your left.
But this is actually the first episode that I could recall where they actually made a character model that could have a backstory. Now, if you recall, when they're looking for, they're looking with the flashlights for, I believe it's R2-D2, and they see a Weequay. He's sitting down. He's drinking a beer or something like that. And they kind of shine the light on him, and he doesn't look scared, and he kind of walks off. And that was the first time I thought, this is the Clone Wars real world hood. I'm like, this Weequay has a backstory, and I can't wait till they tell it, because he's some kind of Jedi. I just kept thinking he's some kind of Jedi, and I was so excited about this this drunken Weequay about maybe get a figure or something like that. But
you hear that, Hasbro? Baron wants a Weequay hobo to go with his ice cream man. That was a horribly wasted cameo by Duff Goldman from Food Network on the cake droid.
I got to say that as much as we all think Seth Green sounded like a great droid, I didn't know that he was cameoing as the voice. But when the Baker droid started speaking, I'm like, that doesn't sound at all like a droid. I honestly, it drew me out. And I'm like, did they just let any production assistant, hey, we got a line for a droid. You, intern, come read. That's what I thought, because it was so poorly done. I'm like, there's nothing droidish at all about this. And then I find out, oh, it's a celebrity cameo, which makes so much sense in animation. Did Dave Filoni just have a sweet tooth that day?
Well, I guarantee you this is what happened. There was an episode, because I actually watched that show. I watched a lot of Food. There was an episode at the end of last season where they made a giant life-size R2-D2 cake for the closing of season 2 of Clone Wars. Probably while they were there at the ranch, because they made the cake at the ranch, Dave said, hey, you know, we're going to do an episode next season where this guy makes a cake. Why don't you come in here and lay down the voice for him? And that's what happened. There you go. Since he couldn't be with us today, the fabulous Nathan P. Butler did send us a little bit for Continuity Corner. So we're going to send it over to Nathan, and he can tell us how, or if at all, this episode affects or is affected by the continuity.
All right. Well, before getting into continuity, let me toss out a couple of quick thoughts here, since I haven't had a chance to say anything else about the episode previously in the show this time. Number one, I really am starting to agree with those out there who say that the Secrets Revealed title for this season is really more a matter of secrets revealed in the sense that we're getting tie-ins to previous episodes that give more context, and that's the secret. rather than there being any actual secrets being revealed, unless the secrets being revealed or hinted at might perhaps tie into the one supposedly trying to be kept secret by the Hutts here in sending Cad Bane after Zero. Maybe. And number two, I love the fortune cookie. A failure in planning is a plan for failure. That is the perfect metaphor for this episode that did not frankly need to exist, felt like it had very little plot, and really makes you wonder about this whole idea of planning an entire series out ahead of time, but producing episodes out of order because of production concerns rather than storytelling concerns. But I digress. Given that we have an episode here that doesn't really feel like it does a whole heck of a lot other than just leading up to Hostage Crisis, which could have been covered perhaps in its newsreel or some other fashion, it may be surprising how much continuity-wise gets developed in this episode, mostly in terms of new characters, character models, and that sort of thing. Although, you have to wonder if the StarWars.com episode guide in adding all of those little details, much more than we've seen for really any other episode this season, and perhaps more than most episodes for the entire series thus far, is just trying to make up for the lack of real oomph in this episode overall. First off, let's take a look at new characters or character models. We have the IG-86 droid here, Helios 3E, not 3D. We'd seen Helios 3D back in Hostage Crisis, along with two other unidentified IG-86 droids. It is possible that this droid, in fact I would say it's probably likely that this droid, Helios 3E, is one of the ones that we see in Hostage Crisis, since it takes place shortly after this very episode. However, there hasn't been any confirmation of that that I know of. Suffice to say, though, this is not the same character as Helios 3D, the named IG-86 droid from Hostage Crisis. It would have to be one of the other two, as this is 3E, not 3D. We're also given the name of that green droid shopkeeper, which is GL-916. With the GL perhaps meaning George Lucas, though I'm unsure what the 916 would stand for. Unless it's the number of episodes in his film series, because he did at one point say there was 9, and at one point he did say there was 1, and at another time he said there were 6, just not necessarily in that order. It was actually 1-12-9-6, not 916. That's probably a stretch on my part. We have B-O-N-1, Bone 1. Please tell me that's not a sexual reference, especially given the fact that the droid spa, of course, in this episode ties somewhat back into the droid harem that we saw in The Great Heap with KT-0, which had a lot of its own sexual innuendo. Also working at the spa was SND-1, Cindy-1, which frankly reminds me of the old Time Tracks time travel TV series that had a little holographic artificial intelligence in a credit card called Cindy, the Consumer Information Network Data Interface. And how I remember that after this long is beyond me. Also, while on the subject of droids, we have J0N0, or Jono, presumably, which is the droid based on the 8D8 design from Return of the Jedi, but that is not the same droid. Just the same type. We also have Senator Aang here, who is a Runan from the planet Runa, not to be confused with Rune, as seen in the Droids cartoon series. We have the weird squid-faced alien vendor, Droogan, who is a Kromboan, both of which are brand new, the character and the species. And we have the three Hutts that are new to the series, albeit not entirely to the expanded universe. You have Aruba the Hutt, who is a brand new character and is probably related to brothers Jamaica and Ooh, I Wanna Take Ya. You have Uruk the Hutt, who is also a new character. And we have what's believed to be Gorga the Hutt, who is previously established in various Boba Fett stories and the Jabba tape as a nephew of Jabba. Beyond the characters, of course, we have the continuity context here. This episode is meant to be a lead-up, of course, to Hostage Crisis. That does completely throw out of whack some parts of the timeline of episodes that I presented as a proposal in the previous episode here of Republic Forces Radio Network. I said that something was going to come along and shuffle everything around pretty soon, and yep, that's exactly what happened. The reason it shuffles things around is because in leading up to Hostage Crisis, this episode also apparently takes place after Holocron Heist, Cargo of Doom, and Children of the Force, which is where I was led astray. Well, you might say, hang on a second, Toto 360 shows up in this episode, but he was destroyed in those previous ones. How on earth could this possibly come after the character was destroyed? Well, leave it to either the retcon or the poor planning. In this case, because the StarWars.com episode guide reveals what is not revealed within the episode, which is that after Toto 360 was destroyed back in Holocron Heist, The character was then rebuilt by Anakin so he could learn more about Cad Bane, and the character somehow escaped to be back with Bane here in this episode. I think it's a little convoluted, though how much do you want to bet we're going to see an episode at some point that explains the escape of Toto 360? Seriously, the next time I hear George Lucas complaining about how they're possibly going to make a live-action series but just don't know how to do it because of how much each episode's going to cost, I'm going to turn right back around and throw this episode and corruption back in their faces saying, you know what, you could save money if you didn't produce pointless episodes, like the one possibly coming with Toto 360's escape. Seriously, I'd bet money on it. Speaking of episode order, we also learned that this episode must be before Senate Murders, though, frankly, because it's before Hostage Crisis, we already knew that. Anakin Dafar is in Hostage Crisis and dies in Senate Murders, so of course this is prior to that. However, it may be even closer to Senate Murders than we thought, because Senator Aang here is supposed to be one of the characters that is being persuaded to vote on a particular piece of legislation that apparently is tying into Senate Murders. So we'll have to see how much that plays out. But certainly Senate Murders is continuing to be a major linchpin in this series. Finally, I should also note here that there are some people who are concerned about the idea that C-3PO would have been a protocol droid for the Manacron system, seeing as how it's either been with Anakin Skywalker, Shmi Skywalker, or Padme Amidala, secretly Skywalker, for pretty much the entire span of what we've seen of C-3PO in the prequel era thus far. Remember, though, they always said that C-3PO was a protocol droid that was created about 100 and some odd years ago, 112 years before A New Hope, according to EU sources, and this was in line with what George Lucas wanted of the character. The idea is that he was simply a droid that was eventually discarded, and then Anakin Skywalker used mostly parts from that one droid to rebuild and create C-3PO. So C-3PO in and of himself has essentially two birth dates here. So that comment about him previously being a protocol droid in that particular region, that is not contradictory. In fact, it fits well with Lucas's vision of the character and the way the EU has developed him. He's got 80 years worth of history from the time that he was activated to the time that he was rebuilt by Anakin Skywalker that we know relatively little about. It'll be interesting if there's any more use of that, perhaps with hidden programming or something from the past, but I doubt it. Be kind of cool to see, though. And that, I think, closes up a continuity corner that is much longer than this episode probably justified. But, hey, we take it as it comes. Thanks, guys. I'll turn it back over to you now.
All right. Thank you, Nathan P. Butler. Yeah, I am right with Nathan there. I fully expect them to do an episode where we see the rebuilding of Toto in one way or another. And it is nice to see that not all of the EU is getting thrown away. Of course, it's EU that is hand in hand with stuff that George has established as far as the basis of C-3PO. So maybe that's what everybody needed to do from the start. Just make sure that they were holding hands with George's vision, and then we wouldn't be so far astray with all these conflicting EU stories. Who knows?
You know, I think Nathan missed perhaps the most obvious thing. Area code 916 is a California area code. It's Sacramento. I don't think they live there, but perhaps one of the writers does or something. I mean, if GL is George Lucas, the first thing I went to with 916 is that a California area code? Why, yes. Yes, it is.
Ooh, maybe that's what it is for us Uber geeks. They're going to give us a little bit of George Lucas's phone number every week by the end of the series or of the season. Then we can call George. It'll keep us faithful every week.
I'm sure that they'll do that exact thing.
Told you. See? Brilliant.
I just have a question. This is real quick, but when they erase R2-D2's brain, does that mess up any existing continuity? Is he supposed to remember something that had happened to him before this episode that he will say in a future movie that happens after the Clone Wars? Does this mind wipe mess up any continuity like that? Because that's the first thing I thought of, because they wipe C-3PO's mind at the end of episode 3 because he is supposedly not know of any of the plans in episode 4, so it makes sense. This is the first time they wipe R2-D2, so will that cause any problems continuity-wise?
It wasn't a full wipe.
No, they didn't take him back to zero.
It was just like the last 15 minutes. They just kind of cut a little bit out of his memory. They didn't completely wipe him, otherwise they wouldn't remember their master, they wouldn't remember what they'd been sent to the market to do, they wouldn't remember anything. They would be, just like Garney said, they'd be back at zero, they'd be at the base.
Yeah, they wouldn't even have known to go home if they did a complete wipe. So they just, you know, conveniently erased just the past few days. And could there be any lingering data corruption? Possibly, if they ever want there to be, but the odds are it'll never come up again.
All right, so we have a few voicemails this week. Let's see what we have.
Hi, my name is Devin Cox, and here are my thoughts on the last episode of The Clone Wars. Whiskey, Tango, Foxtrot, Batman, what is going on here? This whole time jumping back and forth between what I guess was seasons one and two and now the fill-in episodes of three is getting so out of hand that I keep expecting to either see a blue police box fly through the middle of the screen or see out of a DeLorean. One of those two things has to happen at this point because the stories are just too freaking chaotic. And somewhere in the middle of all this churn and chaos was a storytelling thread that they were theoretically supposed to be really hyping up. Oh, all these big, deep, dark secrets are revealed. Well, guess what? The secrets they're revealing so far are so incredibly uninteresting to me that the greatest revelation is going to be whether or not I hang around till the season finale at this point. Thanks, y'all. I love the podcast. Bye.
Yes, this is a very convoluted season. We are all over the place, and we see it every episode. Hopefully this isn't the big secret, but then again,
I'm sure that it's like Rise of the Bounty Hunters. It's coming. They're just, I don't know. This season seems like, maybe I'm going to be optimistic, they're getting all of their lackluster, as he said, Whiskey Tango Foxtrot episodes out of the way so that we can then just have a rock in the second half of the season.
Yeah, but I kind of remember most of season one being those kinds of episodes, so they're going to have to do two more seasons of this just to bookend all that stuff with good stories.
There's been a lot of negativity about the jumping around with the episodes. And for some reason, I don't know if I'm weird, but that doesn't really bother me very much. Once I can kind of orient as to when it took place, or even I can just enjoy the episode and then kind of figure it out later, it's really not bothering me all that much. And I don't really see why it's a really big deal, I guess, other than the confusion that it can cause. But I feel like they give you enough hints, enough little nuggets of information that you can kind of piece it together, and it's not that bad.
It just is kind of bothersome for me because I'm used to serialized storytelling, this, then this, then this. And when you have episodes that are so obviously prequels of other episodes, but you don't make it clear on the show and you have to go to the website and read ahead of time, and I'm trying to stay spoiler free until I see the episode, and so I don't go, and when I watch the episode, I'm not sure when it's taking place. For me, it's disconcerting. And it's not, again, if it was being done for a storytelling device and it turned out that the big reveal at the end is this was a prequel episode to something, that would be one thing. But here, man, I understand that what they're doing is reminding us about the whole Zero thing so that next week we can pick up on that and go into it some more as they continue this arc. It's very similar to what they did with the very first episodes of this season where they had the prequel and the sequel to Rookies. And now they have the prequel and the sequel to Hostage Crisis. But they've got the newsreel at the beginning, right? Why not just call it out right there in the newsreel? That would just be the simplest of solutions rather than, I mean, does anyone else feel these newsreels are getting completely useless? Yes, there's a war going on. Thank you for letting us know that again.
Yeah. Season three is comparable to watching Full House on Nick at Night. And I'll tell you why I know this.
Because you watch a lot of Full House?
Because my daughter has taken an interest in this abysmal show for some reason. And
cut it out.
She'll watch it in the evenings. And they'll show three episodes in a row. And in the first one, DJ's a little girl. She's 10. The next one, she's 17 and going on her big date. And then the next one, she's like mid-early teenagers. They're all over the place. But this is a show that was produced years ago. They've got the whole thing under wraps. They can show whatever, whenever. This is a new show that's supposed to be telling an ongoing story. This isn't the kind of convoluted stuff that usually happens. People want stories that connect to next week, not to 2 years ago.
Well, what it is, it's risky because they're always saying that this is on Cartoon Network. This is for children. They say it's not made for us, but obviously they put in elements there that are made for the collectors and the older Star Wars fans. But Arnie, you said it time and time again. How is a child supposed to follow this process? And it's a risky, risky move that they're doing because kids just turn it off. You know, they'll turn something off. They have other shows that they could go to that are in sequence, that are in order, that may not be just as good, but if they're able to follow it, it's just as good to them. So it's a risky thing that what they're doing here. you know, because kids are finicky. They like what they like. And if something changes on them, they have no problem turning it off. And I just hope that there's so many stories left to tell that pulling stuff like this that could go bad anytime is very risky. So it either shows a lot of confidence in your product or it could be you're foolish about it. So I haven't decided on which one it is yet.
By the same token, I don't know if kids necessarily are used to watching things in order. When I was a kid, I didn't have, I mean, and I'm talking a young kid, I didn't have scheduled watching times. I'd have, oh, parents are letting me watch TV, let me see what's on, and channel flip, and here's a show I like, and normally they aren't so tied together. I mean, going back to the 80s, one episode of He-Man didn't have to happen before any other specific episode of He-Man, and with Transformers kind of the same way, with the exception of pre-movie Transformers and post-movie Transformers. So here, I suppose the rise of the Dinobots episode had to happen before any other Dinobot episode, but it just seems these episodes are more tightly woven, more sophisticated than cartoons from when I was a child. But I still think that, by and large, kids may not be every Friday I'm watching Clone Wars. And if they get the DVD sets, they may not start with disc one. They may be like, ooh, I want to see the episode that has Cad Bane in it and jump to disc three or something, you know? So maybe it's easier for them because they're already used to nonlinear viewings.
Well, I don't necessarily agree with that because I know that watching G.I. Joe, I watched every single one of those Sepentor-ish episodes and Cobra Law and stuff. And I watched that Teen Wolf cartoon, and I'm sure I watched every single episode every Saturday, and I look forward to that. I can speak for my son that if he doesn't understand something, that he's willing to turn it off a lot quicker than, say, you or I. For children, you know, they can turn a blind eye to something real quick if they don't understand it.
All right, here's our next voicemail.
Hello, everyone. It's Robert Darth Akari. Figured I'd call in for Republic Forces Radio Network about my thoughts about this week's episode of Clone Wars. Bear with me here. I personally find it appalling that it's taken nearly three seasons for them to come up with an episode highlighting the heroic exploits of the true hero of the Star Wars saga, C-3PO, human cyborg relations. Oh, sorry. Had to do that. But yeah, I really enjoyed this episode. Thought it was great. I like the fact that they're kind of delving into the whole Hutt gangland makeup. It'll be interesting to see what Nathan says this week about as far as that affecting the continuity of the Hutt crime syndicate's organization, whether or not there's actually five families or not. I'm not too sure. But I did appreciate the fact that they did have them speak in Huttese and have the Cad Bane do the whole little thing with my Huttese, the little rusty droid, please translate for me. Thought that was a nice touch. In fact, actually, as weird as it seems, some of the elements of this episode reminded me of the old droids cartoon with the whole droid spa sequence. I kept on expecting something funny to happen there with R2, but it's just kind of a little bit of a misdirect in a way, but I enjoy this episode quite a bit. I'm really looking forward to seeing what they do with Quinlan Voss in this next episode. So, always enjoying the shows, and I'll talk to you later. Bye.
Thanks, Darth Akari. You know, this really is has been a droid-centric episode. It's really reminded us a lot of ways of droids, and I have to think that maybe somebody in the animation staff was listening to RFRN and thought, hey, so many people are going to be listening to these guys talking about droids over the summer. We should do a very droids feeling episode. And maybe we had a little bit to do the inspiration behind this episode. What do you think?
I hate to shatter your illusion there, but it takes them so long to do one of these episodes that I don't think that that's exactly what happened. But where did we get the idea to do droids? Maybe somebody knew this episode was coming?
Oh.
Nah, I'm just screwing with you, and I didn't have any clue. It's just a great coincidence.
Great minds.
I'd like to think that they did change because of the droids, because you guys did such a great job. And I'm the character model for Kit Fisto, so you're not going to change anything.
And might I give Darth Akari a kudos on his great C-3PO impersonation?
All right, our next voicemail is from Glenn.
This is Glenn calling about this week's Clone Wars episode. And looking at this episode and just at this episode, I found it, thoroughly enjoyable. And I imagine that young children may have been, rolling around on the floor laughing. But when you look at this episode in the context of the whole series, I have to say WTF, because the main takeaway that I got was that Cad Bane is not as bad as we thought. He was hired separately to get the Senate building plans rather than it be part of his huge scheme and planning to infiltrate the Senate and get Zero freed. It was sort of a separate thing. He got hired to do that. And then, that information you can use it in this next gig. And then he also kidnaps the wrong droid even to get those plans. And then only by chance and sort of luck is it, R2-D2 that would know that. R2-D2 probably isn't in the Senate that much. He's Anakin's droid, although he sort of was Padme's. But, sort of luck. And that's really like what? So, Cad Bane didn't think about all of himself. Disappointed there. Second thing, in the movie, it's like, Jabba says, Zero will pay for what he's done. So, that's really, to me, that's enough of a reason that they, for the Hutts to sort of try to get Zero released out of prison so they can deal with him themselves. I don't know what this, this hidden information deal, I don't know what this plot is that's going to be happening, next week's episode. I'm totally not into that at all. And it makes me wonder, what was the deal with last week? Because wouldn't it make more sense for that episode to take place after hostage crisis when Zero is free and not in jail to release to sort of go after Padme, especially since the end of that episode, Aura Singh gets captured, and as far as we know, she's still captured when she has to be free going into hostage crisis. So that really, I don't get that at all. And look forward to this week's discussion on this pod, on this episode, and hopefully the season will go in a more productive direction after this search for Zero Hutt next week. Bye.
He did bring up an interesting point that Aura Singh was loose in a hostage crisis, which we know is the very next episode. And we did just see her get arrested last week. So is there going to be a point in the newsreel where Cad Bane busts Aura Singh out of jail next week to carry out his deal? Or,
well, it's non-linear storytelling. Who knows how many years have passed between the time they get the Senate plans and the time that they actually break Zero out, and the time we see Zero released after that.
That's right. Who knows how long it took for them to bring him up in the basement.
I mean, it's not like they start off with Stardate 84927.1, where we can actually piece this together. I mean, do we even know that last week's episode took place before this week's episode?
Well, that's what I was going to jump in and say. It's like, did we get an official statement as to when last week took place? Because it may have taken place after this, but we're not sure. So, or it could have been like months and months, and Aura Singh could have been broken out of jail weeks ahead of this episode. So kind of really ambiguous.
Can I just say, it was revealed recently that there are some new character models coming out where Ahsoka will actually get to cover her midriff and things. I will be so upset if they start using the new character models in episodes that take place earlier in the timeline. And, well, Ahsoka always had this change of clothes. We just never saw it until right now after the animators made it.
Well, they're never home for her to go to her wardrobe and change. I mean, they're always out gallivanting around the galaxy and they never take any luggage. So, of course, she's in the same outfit.
And it must smell.
All right, our last voicemail comes from Jason this week.
Hey, gang, this is Jason from Lake County, Florida. Salacious J on the forums. Just listened to the special report. Wow, what a lot of information on that timeline Nathan had. Holy moly. I knew this TV show was getting, convoluted in the timeline, but, throwing in the web comics, the young readers books, the video games, man, they put things just all over the place. I'm going to wait for the, deluxe Blu-ray set to come out at the end of the series, in order, so that way I can try to, enjoy them in order. But, I'm enjoying the Blu-rays now. I mean, I guess the timeline's not that hard. But throwing the other stuff in there, what a lot of information. My opinion on the vintage card backs with Clone Wars figures, I'm for it. I love the vintage card back style. I love the Clone Wars figure style. So, I mean, combining the two, I think we're going to have a winner. I hope, like Jerry said, either Hasbro will do a realistic sculpt of the Clone Wars figures, or do an updated sculpt of the Clone Wars figures on there. I'd be happy with that too. I just hope that they don't stick, you know, the same Obi-Wan, the same Anakin, the same Cad Bane onto this vintage card back and expect somebody to pay an extra $2 for it. I mean, the vintage is a collector's base line, from my understanding, and so hopefully Hasbro will do a collector's base figure to stick onto that card back too. So, guys, keep up the good work. I'm enjoying the show. Bye.
Thank you, Jason. Nice to see another one is in my camp of they are going to release a giant box set of all these in order when the time comes.
You know, I will say about the figures, the question that Jerry asked was, are there going to be realistic Clone Wars figures? And the response is, there are Clone Wars figures coming to the vintage line. I read that as, yeah, they're realistically styled. We're getting all new figures up to the vintage line standards of Clone Wars characters, and I can't wait for my Cad Bane.
You know, I'm all for that, too. This goes against, not that Hasbro has never backpedaled on themselves before, but they did originally say that we would not see these figures in a realistic form. Being able to see them in realistic form and on vintage cards, that'll be awesome. And I'm right with you. A realistic Cad Bane will look much better with the rest of my Bounty Hunters on the almighty Bounty Hunter shelf than the Clone Wars one that's there now.
I'm really excited for more of the droids that we're getting, the Clone Wars style droids that we're getting for more of a realistic look. And, you know, the Weequays, and we're getting all of these new characters, and, you know, who's not going to want a realistic-looking Ahsoka, tube top or not? I mean, that's just going to be really cool to see what they're going to be able to do with that. You know, aside from them not being movie screen characters, original trilogy characters, I mean, I think you have to really be excited for the possibilities here.
All right, so next week, The Hunt for Zero, and looks like we're going to get Quinlan Vos. So Quinlan Vos, think big payoff or big fizzle?
I'm going to echo that first voicemail. And my first reaction to this was Whiskey Tango Foxtrot, because I was under the impression that George Lucas up and down could not stand Quinlan Vos, and absolutely under no circumstances would he be showing up. And all of a sudden it's just like, here he is. So I was like, my jaw was on the floor. I was really surprised. I have not read any of his material. I have no idea what he's like. I've managed to miss all of his EU stuff, so this will be interesting for next week.
I'm kind of confused on the whole Quinlan Vos stories. I've read some of them, but not all of them. I'm not all caught up on the Clone Wars comics, and he's not really big in the novels or anything. I'm glad to see him appearing, though, because he is such a major part of the Clone Wars, assuming they don't completely decimate continuity more by his inclusion. I'm excited by the thought of it. As for whether he'll be a good character or not, I don't know. You know, sometimes they make great characters out of nothing, and other times I don't like what they do with characters, so we'll have to see what they do here.
So my thoughts on the preview for next week, I thought it looked pretty good. I'm pretty excited to see Quinlan Vos. I haven't read any of his EU stories. I know he's one of the Jedis who does survive Order 66, so it's pretty excited to see him. I didn't really get to see all of the preview. It kind of cut off halfway through, but I'm pretty excited. You know, it's about time. We haven't had Jedis doing Jedi stuff in a while. You know, we've had Ahsoka kind of doing her Jedi thing, but, you know, we need some trained Jedis out there to do some flips and some, maybe he'll bust out with some Force Lightning or something. Who knows?
And I've never heard that George hates Quinlan Vos. If he hated Quinlan so much, why would he have included him in episode 3 in a vocal mention? And there was intent that he would actually appear in episode 3. Because remember, there was this big tease coming around. Oh, an EU character is going to appear in episode 3. And everybody was sitting around. I remember being at Celebration 3. Everybody was guessing who it was. My personal bet was Thrawn. Other people were saying Quinlan Vos. And it was revealed, I think, by Steve Sansweet, it was supposed to be Quinlan Vos. The scene probably being killed during Order 66 or something. The scene never got filmed, and they just ended up with the dropped reference. If Lucas hated the character, why would he do that?
I fully admit that I was probably completely misinformed, so I bow to your greater knowledge.
See, I'd kind of heard that he actually liked the character. That's why Ayla got in episode 2, is he kind of liked, not necessarily.
Who doesn't like Ayla?
Well, it'll be interesting to see. I'm looking forward to it. I hope that it's not the big fizzle. I hope they don't completely Yeah, I mean, in the EU, Quinlan Voss is this character that's kind of danced on the dark side, which apparently everybody does in the EU at some point. So hopefully they're not going to say that they're pulling him from the bright, white, shining example ranks to go help Obi-Wan and just totally destroy 4 years of comics in one fell swoop. But, you know, we'll see. They do love to do that kind of stuff. All right. Well, I thank everybody for tuning in and listening to us talk about evil plans, and hope everybody will join us again next week for The Hunt for Zero. Want to thank my co-hosts, Jen and Barrent, and also the master from Star Wars Action News, Arnie, for joining us.
Happy to be here.
So we will see you all next week. Be sure to stop by our Facebook, Twitter, and our forums and tell us what you thought.
And if I could put in a little personal plea, podcast award nominations are currently open, and Star Wars Action News and another podcast I'm on, Now Playing, a movie review podcast, which you can find at nowplayingpodcast.com, are hoping to be nominated. Now Playing was nominated last year as Best Movie Film Podcast. If you haven't checked it out, it's one of the top five movie film podcasts on the internet, according to Podcast Awards. Again, nowplayingpodcast.com. We would appreciate it if you take a couple minutes if you enjoy Republic Forces Radio Network, which is a child podcast of Star Wars Action News, and just nominate Star Wars Action News in general for a podcast award. All of the details are on our forums, so thank you in advance for that nomination. We appreciate your time.
All right. Thank you, Arnie. And again, thank everybody for being here with me. We'll see you all next week.
See you next week.
See you next time,
everybody.
Thank you for listening to Republic Forces Radio Network. Remember, we want your thoughts on the next episode of the Clone Wars series. You can leave us a voicemail at 415-508-JEDI every week from the time the new episode airs, and voicemails received by 1 a.m. Sunday morning may be included in our next episode. You can find our reviews of previous Clone Wars episodes, as well as our summer series reviewing the classic droid cartoon series, at our website, www.republicforces.com. And be sure to listen to our other Star Wars podcast, Star Wars Action News, covering all aspects of Star Wars collecting, from figures to high-end collectibles to Star Wars Band-Aids. Republic Forces Radio Network is hosted by Jerry, Arnie, Dan, Jen, Barrent, and Nathan P. Butler of StarWarsFanWorks.com. Republic Forces Radio Network, RepublicForces.com, and Star Wars Action News are not affiliated with Lucasfilm or any other official Star Wars-related company. Star Wars and all that the Star Wars universe contains are copyright and trademarked Lucasfilm Limited, and no infringement is intended. Republic Forces Radio Network is a production of Ingonza Media Incorporated, copyright 2010, all rights reserved.
And I blame Dan.
It's always Dan's fault. This is Celebration 5 all over again.
And I let him take the fall.
I just saw the picture of you in the women's shirt again.
You know, I just listened to the Academy and Jen making reference to it. Why is that coming up again? All
of never going away.
Hey,
you look like such a bodybuilder in it, though. You should wear women's shirts more often.
Wow, just wow. I could say that as wow.
And what's funny is long before you ever wore the women's shirt, it just fits so well, no pun intended, because when I had Brock do the understudy line, I'm like, and in the part of Marjorie is Dan. Well, in Marjorie's shirt is Dan.
Be sure to stop by our Facebook and be sure to stop.
Our Facebook?
Be sure to.
I guess Dan has had enough of being host. He's fleeing.
That was too much. I trouble again. I scared him away.
And we have Rockstar's first edit out.
I don't see that coming out.
Don't edit for Rockstar. I edit bad enough on my own.
Because I'm not a big EU, and this is where I would ask Nathan, and I will email him probably later on tonight. But
well, you know, Arnie is here, host of the Star Wars Action News Book Club.
So I will ask.
Who knows a thing or two about EU.
I will ask you, Arnie, is this the first time that we've had a Council of Hutts? I will change or I will die, my master. No. Okay, let me start over. I don't know why you're always interrupting me, Arnie. That's all I have to say.
I was actually, though, I was interrupting, but it was Dan this time, not you, Barrent.
Don't tell my wife that I like Teen Wolf, but...
And Jason, it's also nice to hear that you have such good reception in your cave. So thank you again.
I don't know why that struck me as so funny. And Dan, I've never heard that George hates Quinlan Voss. If he hated Quinlan so much, why would he have included him in episode 3 in a vocal mention?
Hey, I didn't say he hated the character. The girl said that.
Yeah, that was me. Sorry. Oh.
The girl.
Jen?
Who doesn't like half-naked Twi'leks? Hello. Anyway.
I like them half as much as full-naked Twi'leks.
Fair enough. Play ball.
And also one tip, correct me if I'm wrong, it's Barrent, like parent.
I do it like
right?
different every time I say his name. Barrent, which way is it?
It's like parent with a B.
Thank you. Okay. I'm
but sorry. I got Boy Everest once, and there's not even that many letters in my name, so don't
do Boy Everest.
Boy Everest. That is now what I am calling you.
Can you change his name in the forums to
Master Boy Everest? I mean, that's so cool. It's like Little Mountain.
I know. I was like, where? And I had actually said the name. She wasn't even reading it. I had said it to her. And she was like, Boy Everest? And I was like, no. No, it's not Boy Everest. No.
It is
it's
now.
It's whatever you thought it was before you thought Boy Everest. I'll go with that.
I'm hunting for Zero on toy store shelves, but Hasbro says it's not happening now. And that makes me sad.
Yeah. Cause
I just want to be a figure.
See, I get a combination of Southern Belle and Droopy Dog out of him. sometimes he sounds like a sweet Southern Belle, and sometimes he sounds like I'm happy.
He sounds more like the guy from Family Guy, I always thought. Bring your fat space ass over here. That guy.
The old guy. Yeah.
Yeah, he sounds just like him. Bring your fat space ass.
He's the illegitimate love child of Droopy Dog, the perverted old man, and Southern Belle.
Oh, God.
I hit the jackpot. What? Sounds just like the guy from Family Guy. I was like, wow.
You wander off like a drunken nooner.